Gentlemen, and welcome to the other podcast, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. And as usual, we're here with my good friend and co-host, John Hogue.
Yeah. Hi, Stacy. I was just checking on connections going in and out. And it,
by the way, I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain. I think I forgot to say that.
Yeah, we're just having a discombobulated Saturday evening tonight, yeah. Folks. I'm the other guy on the other podcast. I'm John Hogue. I blog at Hoguewash. Stacy blogs at theothermccain.com and at other fine spots around the interwebs. And I don't see Diana connecting with us, but we'll see what happens if we get our connection.
A call to be expected from Valdosta, Georgia, yeah. Momentarily.
Oh, it says connected with Diana, and her face has now appeared on the console. Are you there, Diana?
I am. Yay!
Yes. Yeah, you are. Good. We're finally all together, sort of, kind of, mostly.
Yeah, we had, for a couple of weeks, we had technical problems, and then last week, we couldn't get Diana connected.
Well, you know, life is like that. Some days, and other days, it's even weirder.
We're sitting here drinking coffee. Yeah. John has had a long day.
I've had a long week.
Yeah, I've had a long week too, but I managed to get some sleep overnight.
All that in a compromised credit card this afternoon. So yeah. I'm just in a wonderful mood. We usually do our little chit-chatting back and forth. How are things going in Valdosta, Diana?
Well, see, it is soggy that walking around like you are frying in your own grease. Yesterday, our senior feed gram is people are that it's delivery. They have to come and up. That's why we have and. Well, I'm a reading program is going so well as well.
Diana, you seem to be having, you're breaking up. Have you got a funky internet connection or something? Okay, let's, we're losing about 50% of your voice. It's pretty dropout prone. Why don't you pop in and pop back out and see if that gets you a better connection.
Let me see.
Okay.
Well, it has been a busy week, and today, of course, is Juneteenth.
Yes. Well, actually, yesterday was Juneteenth observed.
Oh yes, that's right. They've got to get a day off work for the federal employees.
Well, actually,
that's just what we need. Well, federal employees not working.
Well, actually, but us contractors for federal contractors don't get a day off. At least we don't. As far as the contract's concerned. However, my employer did in fact pay us 8 days of holiday time. On top of working. So that was kind of nice. But that was the one nice thing that happened this week. There was another holiday this week, Stacy.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, Monday was Flag Day. Now, Flag Day is not such a big holiday that everybody celebrates, but I have a particular connection to it being a Nashvillian.
Uh-huh.
You see, and I blogged about this on...
you're not so much of a villain. I think you're Nashville. More of a Nash hero.
Well, no.
Nashville. Okay.
Well, you see, there was this New England sea captain by the name of William Driver. And in 18, 24. He was given a 12 by 24 foot flag, which was kind of impressive, and he named it Old Glory and would fly it from all the ships he commanded. And when he retired from the sea, he settled in Nashville and lived on Summer Street, which is now Fifth Avenue, and had a locust tree in the yard and displayed the flag from the locust tree in the yard. And then in 1861, he had the flag remade in from a 24-star flag, which it had been originally, to the then current 31-star configuration. But in 1861, also, Tennessee seceded, and he was worried about his flag being stolen, so he had it hidden away, sewn up inside a quilt. And then in February of 62, General Grant showed up in town, and Nashville was occupied. And Grant heard about the flag and asked for permission to fly it from the state capitol. So it flew there for a day. And then drivers basically took the flag, and it became a family heirloom. It was given to the Smithsonian in the early 20th century. And if you go to the Smithsonian Museum of American History, you can see the original Old Glory there. And Captain Driver is buried in the city cemetery in Nashville, and Diana's trying to get in, and I just missed the message. If she'll send that to me again, I will click on it on time. But his grave is one of the very few places, along with Fort McHenry and a few other places, that that it is Congress has authorized the flag to fly after dark. You know, you're not supposed to fly the flag at night, except in these very few places, which, of course, you drive down the road now, you see these huge flags on spotlights where they're not supposed to be. But there it is. That's Old Glory. That was my Monday. And the week kind of went downhill from there, at least from my point of view.
Okay. Aha, do we hear Diana now? Diana.
The problem is I'm hearing you got chopped up and so I hang up.
Yeah, you're breaking. You're chopped up as well. We're going to have to figure out what's going on, Diana. We're going to have to get together in the week and run a practice show and see what's going on.
Oh, I'm so okay. I'm going to hang. Sorry.
Okay, we'll get it sorted out eventually. Sometimes we communicate. Yes, well, thanks for trying. Sometimes we communicate in spite of the technology, and sometimes I wish people would not communicate at all.
Speaking of which,
there are some people who just don't understand their brand image, apparently. And one of the real screw-ups of the week was Victoria's Secret.
You know, I remember, was it the late 80s, early 90s, going to the mall with my wife, you know, and you bought the, you know, I mean, you buy the lingerie for your wife, but it's, you know, it's kind of a gift to yourself as a husband.
Actually, I never did that.
Well, anyways, but when
I'll be absolutely blunt. I like my wife the same way I like salads. No dressing at all.
Meanwhile, as I was telling my story, what are you interrupting me? But when you made a purchase at Victoria's Secret, they signed you up for the catalog. And the catalog would come to the house. And the catalog was wonderful. Very attractive women in lacy undergarments. And, you know, it was nice, you know. And so for many years, I would, you know, this was a gift to my wife. I would buy her you know, Victoria's Secret at Christmas, you know, and but now it seems that times have changed. It's that's a patriarchal, heteronormative patriarchy to have nice looking women, very nice looking women in underwear.
Well, for not necessarily even underwear. I mean, I can, the one thing that we did buy there was a bathing suit.
Oh, aha.
Right. You know.
Well, anyway, but yes, rule five, everybody loves a pretty girl.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. Everybody loves a pretty girl. Women like to look at beautiful women. Men like to look at beautiful women. Men like to look at, women like to look at handsome men. Men would rather look at a handsome guy than an ugly guy.
Well,
I mean,
you
it's
know,
just people appreciate beauty.
The interesting thing, and this is something sociologically demonstrated, is that when they tried to come out with Playgirl for women, right?
It died.
Yeah, and the thing was, it turned out it was mainly purchased by closeted gay guys in small towns. I don't know, who were looking for the beefcake, you know, and so I don't know. There was, it just, women are not as visually oriented, I suppose.
Well, they're not visually oriented in the same way to the same clues that we are.
Mm-hmm.
But the point
we're
is,
we're programmed.
Well, yes, we are. But the point is that some people are better looking than others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
that's not an injustice.
No, that's just the way things are. You know, some women are tens and some women are fives and some women are ones and some are zeros. And the same thing's true of guys. There's a variation in our gifts. Some of us are gifted with our physical arrangement, attractiveness, whatever. Some of us are gifted with intelligence. Some of us are gifted with musical ability. We're different. But the thing is that...
Well, let me cut to the chase.
Jealousy is what's going on here.
Yes. Let me cut to the chase. I'm quoting here from the UK Daily Mail. It was once one of the most glamorous brands in the world, known for its catwalk show of sexy, slender models who would train for months to ensure they looked the part. But after facing years of plummeting sales figures, an ongoing backlash over its lack of diversity, Victoria's Secret has finally succumbed to its critics by coming up with a new way of promoting the brand after its famed catwalk show was canceled in 2019. The lingerie giant has unveiled its new quote-unquote diverse lineup of spokeswomen, which includes Priyanka Chopra Jonas and Megan Rapinoe. Indian actress Priyanka, 38, who is married to singer Nick Jonas, and LGBT advocate and footballer Megan, 35, join a roster of other diverse leading icons that have been recruited to, quote, shape the future of the brand. They will reportedly join Sudanese model Adut Akesh, freelance skier Eileen Gu, Brazilian transgender model Valentino Sampaio.
Meaning a Victoria's Secret model with a Y chromosome.
Plus size model Paloma Elsesser, I'm sorry, and journalist Amanda Cadney to host a 10-episode podcast where the women will share their stories. The CEO of Victoria's Secret said, quote, the brand needed to stop being about what men want and to be about what women want. Right. Anyways, and so... as I say, on my blog, theothermckay.com, you can go there, and I say goodbye to Victoria's Secret, and I feature some scenes from their 2008 pageant, a little show, the Victoria's Secret show. What was that called? Anyways, well, it is the Swedish supermodel Elsa Husk. And you can look at that. Walking down the runway in sparkly underwear. And it doesn't look bad, I've got to say. Anyways, but the point I'm making is that most of us are not offended by women walking around in underwear. If we looked like Elsa Husk, we would probably be walking around in underwear all the time. But we have adjusted to the reality that we're never going to be at the apex of human beauty, and nobody's ever going to pay us to walk around in our underwear. We're not.
The last time I get paid to walk around in underwear was an Army physical.
Okay. I don't even want that mental image near me. No, but see, here's the thing. We admire the beauty of those who have it rather than to resent our own lack of it because we are not feminists. Feminists hate beauty. Feminists hate love. Feminists hate everything good and wholesome and wish to destroy whatever makes us happy, including Swedish supermodels prancing around in lingerie.
What they hate is success.
Well, yeah, right, right. So now they're going to hire a bunch of ugly women.
Well, not all of them are ugly. A couple of them might pass my test for pretty.
Okay. Well, I don't want to talk about the transgender supermodel. Okay.
He isn't among them. And a couple of the athletes probably have the kind of well-toned bodies that would look pretty good in a bathing suit. But the point is that the Victoria's Secret Collective, you know, it's a complete repudiation of what their brand used to be.
But, you know, this thing about jealousy, right, is that look, you know, the guys who play pro sports or, you know, the athletes of the world, you know, the alpha males that, you know, I enjoy watching the sports, right? I watch the sports all the time. I don't begrudge those guys their $1 million salaries for playing baseball or football or whatever.
It's amazing to watch somebody like Wayne Gretzky skate.
Anyway, yeah, it doesn't matter what sport it is, but the point is that I'm not jealous of these guys, you know, with their Lamborghinis, their private jets and all like that. It's like, why should it, you know, that's no skin off my nose. But so why do these feminists, you know, turn jealousy into a political movement? I'm distracting from what you were saying, but this just burns my cookies.
Yeah, well, look, tastes vary. And from my perspective, like there are two or three of those women that might make my cut for pretty. And a couple of them probably would look good in a bathing suit. But the problem is that they're just not what you think of as a Victoria's Secret model. They're being picked. The whole tone of the webpage announcing this that they have on their website says these people were picked for their politics rather than their looks.
Right.
And
they're woke.
They're described as, and this is a quote, trailblazing partners who share a common goal to drive positive change. And I'll end the quote there. You know, that may be, but I don't think the positive change is going to be to the company's bottom line. I think the best observation about what's going on was made by Sarah Hoyt. She wrote, I'd say the new plan is to appeal to butch lesbians, but that's silly. By calling their new models the VS Collective, they clearly want to appeal to communist butch lesbians. I don't think that they've thought this through, though. There's no way to put a Mao collar on a pair of panties.
Yeah, it's just...
So, no, here's the exit question.
Okay.
What sort of person does find these people attractive?
Yeah, I don't think, and I think that's just it, is I think that sexual attraction, period, is under assault. We're supposed to, I suppose, no, never mind us, but young people are supposed to have an egalitarian approach to sexuality, to be equally attracted to everyone.
Well, I mean, look, there are people who are not healthy in their sexuality. You know, I'm one of these people.
Speaking of which, I'm going to interrupt.
Yes.
I'm going to interrupt. I'm adding something new to the agenda. A candidate for the New York City Council.
Oh, yeah. You just found that story.
Has been scandalized when somebody leaked a video of him in a BDSM dungeon. That's bondage, discipline, sadomasochism. Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, let me just throw this in here about sadomasochism, is that I am neither a sadist nor a masochist. I don't enjoy pain. I have no desire to inflict it on anyone else. I don't want to be dominated. I don't want to be dominated. Whatever happened to just good, wholesome fun in this area of life? I mean,
whatever happened to being faithful to your husband or wife?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, so.
I don't know, but there is. The New York Post has an outtake of this guy with a ball gag in his mouth,
and there's some things you won't find on Hogwash because there's just matters of decorum.
By the way, this candidate for the New York City Council, Zach Wiener, no kin to.
What's a common name in New York City?
Yeah. Well, anyways. His father, Eric Wiener, is a co-creator of the popular children's television show, Dora the Explorer. So I don't know what's going on there. But anyways, I just Stacey, had to throw that in.
Yeah,
there.
Well, Stacey, see, the problem is you're perpetuating stereotypes. And that doesn't fit the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks,
you know, unfortunately, the narrative kind of came off the rails last weekend.
Yeah. Last weekend, there was a mass shooting in downtown Austin, Austin, Texas. It turns out it was perpetrated by a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old who got in some kind of beef and were shooting at each other, and they happened to be in the middle of the downtown nightclub district at, you know, like 1 a.m. or whatever, when the shots rang out and 14 people were hit, at least one of whom died. But the Austin Statesman, what's it called? The Austin Statesman. It's the Statesman dash something. Well, anyways, but the local newspaper refused to publish refused to release the police description of the suspect because the fear that it would be harmful in perpetuating stereotypes.
In other words, he wasn't a Trump voter.
No, he wasn't a Trump voter. Well, anyways, this week, that same weekend, there were at least three other mass shootings. And I'm going to read them to you here. Cleveland, Ohio, 3 people died and 4 people were injured in an early Saturday shooting. None of the victims were identified. That happened about 2:30 a.m. on Buckeye Road near East 89th Street. Savannah, Georgia, a mass shooting killed one person and left 2 others in critical condition. According to the Savannah Police Department, there were 8 total victims in Friday night shooting. Arthur Milton was killed by gunfire. Police said the shooting occurred near the Fred Wessels home apartments on Avery Street. Shots rang out around 9 p.m. when a dark-colored car drove by the residence and fired into a crowd of people outside the home. Wait a minute. Okay, the apartments, okay? This at 9 p.m., you've got a bunch of people standing around outside the apartment and somebody drives by and opens fire. Okay, whatever. Chicago, Illinois, 10 people were shot early Saturday morning in an attack on the South Side, Chicago police said. Gimpier Miles, 29, was killed. The shooting happened just after 2 a.m. in the 7500 block of South Prairie Avenue. Police said the victims were on the sidewalk when two male suspects approached and opened fire. Police haven't issued descriptions of the suspects in any of these mass shootings, but at risk of perpetuating stereotypes, I'm going to take a wild guess and say none of the shooters were Trump voters.
Okay.
No. Anyway, so.
Well.
So yeah, but the
But you see, that, you're perpetuating stereotypes.
Well, yeah.
Okay, but one of the reasons that stereotypes are there is because they reflect the real world. For example, Stacey, what goes clop, 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 bang, clop, 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 clop?
I don't know.
An Amish drive-by. Okay. Now, see, that works because of the stereotype about the Amish still in horse-drawn buggies.
Right, right, right.
But
I'm worried about the Lutherans, frankly. Those Lutherans, with all those Jell-O salads and everything.
Well, yeah, that's particularly there'll be a real problem when Minneapolis goes up again. I'm sure.
That's right. It's the Lutherans, man.
But the point is that we just got a comment saying horses can draw better than you think. Okay. Anyway, the point is that you can't make jokes anymore. It's just, I mean, have you, I tried watching late night TV and it was like, there was nothing there that was funny anymore.
Yeah.
It was just all gone.
But Don Rickles would be, not only would he be unemployed, he'd probably be in prison for,
you know.
Remember Don?
I don't think, Letterman couldn't survive now.
Yeah, well, I don't know about Letterman. Letterman might be okay, but Don Rickles, if you can go online and you can find clips of his roast for the Dean Martin's roast and him roasting Sammy Davis Jr. You know, by the way, when Donald Rickles it would get up to roast, he would roast everybody at the table.
Okay? Right, of course. But, you know, the point is that we are losing just a lot of our connection, not just to history, but just basically to reality. And one of the things, though, that connects me to reality is the fact that, for example, I have to now worry about this compromised credit card. Mm-hmm. And the reason I have to worry about the compromised credit card, because guess what? The billing for this is goes to that. I've got to get that straightened out before the next payment comes due. But, it takes cash to run this, to run the blogs. But folks can help us out with that. For example, there's this yellow button.
Aha, folks. It's time for the shameless capitalism segment of the show, where I tell you that if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com. Oh, I'm choking. Oh, excuse me. I was choked up there. Get all emotional about this, you know.
The yellow button?
The yellow button.
Mm.
Near the top of the center column on the blog, you will see the yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account, where through the technological marvel of the interwebs, you can contribute money to the support of the blog. They take all major credit cards. Many people have their own PayPal account now, and so they can just do it that way. But yes, if you click the yellow button, you can contribute money to support the blog, to support the podcast, and to keep my wife happy. That's the main thing, is that me having money keeps the wife happy. You know, this week, by the way, I drove down to D.C.
I'm sorry.
And visited, dropped by the offices of the American Spectator to hang out with the young staffers and interns down there, to pass along, as it were, the wisdom of the ages to the young protégés.
He's saying this to a guy who's 13 or 14 years older than he is.
Yeah. Paul Ray. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's blog, hoagwash.com.
Yeah, well, there's this tip jar icon over in the sidebar. If you click on that, you wind up taken away to PayPal for my account. And I would very much appreciate support that way. You can make a contribution to the support of the blog, or you can scroll on down and click on the link that takes you to the Hoagwash store, which will allow you to buy all sorts of trinkets, junk, and other stuff branded in ways related to the blog. Or both at Hoagwash and the other McCain, you'll find shopping links to Amazon. And both blogs participate in the Amazon affiliates program, and lots of other bloggers do too. And when you support a blogger by clicking on those shopping links, the blog gets a small commission. You pay the same price, but the blog gets a cut of the action. One of the nice things that Amazon does. But regardless, you have to remember the five most important words in the English language, and that's your cue tonight, Stacy.
The five most important words in the English language are: hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. We will be very, very happy if you do. Meanwhile, you know, we were talking about all that crime that was going on.
We just got buzzed by a helicopter.
Well, it can happen.
I didn't get to look out the window quick enough to see if it was a black helicopter. I'm starting to get paranoid here.
Well, you know, if we were doing this from Stately Hoag Manor, I'm on the approach to a hospital that's a shock trauma operation. So we get State Trooper 3 flying in quite a lot. And then we're also on one of the flight paths between the White House and Camp David. Uh-huh. So every once in a while, we either get the president or one of the decoy helicopters coming over low. Mm-hmm. But usually the president isn't on this time of Saturday, so we don't have to worry about Marine One making noise. What we do have to worry about is the Ministry of Love. Good old Mini Love seems to be setting up. There seem to be a whole bunch of people who are taking 1984 and the lives of others as how to works. And we've got this piece you did about the Biden administration asking us to rat out our friends and family members who might be potentially radicalized.
Yeah, I've got a post at theothermccain.com called "Are You a Terrorist Threat? Do you spread malicious content online?" And if they're going to start pointing fingers at extremists, what about you or me? Who among us is safe from the shadow of suspicion? I quote here from Breitbart.com. President Joe Biden's administration announced their plan to create ways for Americans to report radicalized friends and family to the government in an effort to fight domestic terrorism. One senior administration official explained the importance of stopping politically fueled violence before it started. Quote, "We will work to improve public awareness of federal resources to address concerning or threatening behavior before violence occurs." let's see, I'm going to cut down through here and say, you said,
basically,
those who are family members or friends or coworkers know there are pathways and avenues to raise concerns and seek help. For those who they have perceived to be radicalizing and potentially radicalizing toward violence, the official said. This came after Biden warned about a rise in political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat. On June 1st, Biden described the threat from white supremacy as the most lethal threat to the homeland today. The Biden administration said it would also work with large technology companies on increased information sharing to help combat radicalization.
Well, you know,
The Department of Homeland Security also plans to deploy digital literacy and digital fitness programs to help combat, quote, malicious content online that bad actors deliberately try to disseminate, end quote.
Well, I wonder if we're going to give up and switch to newspeak.
Well, they're criminalizing dissent.
Yeah,
what it's about. It's
but,
about.
But I mean, about, that, but the, but I mean, it. I mean, they're trying to change the language enough that you can't even converse about some of the ideas that might oppose what they're trying to accomplish.
Well. By the way, Charles Murray has a new book coming out.
Yes,
and having seen. Just a brief description and scan the first couple of paragraphs of the introduction. Oh, boy.
Well, somebody got on Twitter and accused him basically of lying about the data.
And, the data.
Yeah.
Which he knows better than anyone else on the planet.
Well, no, here's what his response was. Well, here's the link to where the data is published online. Go look at it and point out what I lied about.
Yeah.
And so basically his response is, okay, if you think I misrepresented the raw data, here it is.
Yeah. And ever since the bell curve was published in the mid-90s, I've been concerned.
By the way, I downloaded the data.
I think a lot of people, a lot of people cognizant of history, understand the abuse that can be made of the kind of data that Charles Murray is talking about. And, you're talking about perpetuating stereotypes. But the one of the things that, was emphasized in the book, and when he was dealing with some of the critics of the book, was that when they're talking about differences in IQ between groups, okay, they're talking about average group differences. If you're listening to the podcast, okay, if you're listening to the podcast, you want to get out a pen and write down those three words, average group differences. Differences. If we are going to aggregate everyone, according to their genetic profile, right? Okay. If we're going to say that, we're going to lump, and this is what critical race theory is all about. It's about telling the only thing about you that matters, is your ancestry, your DNA, your race, right? Okay. In these broad categories, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, these categories, by the way, are so large that they include people who are just completely dissimilar, so ethnically different among themselves. Okay.
But
Okay, but the point is that he's talking about the average group differences. And here's the point. If you're wanting to create equality between groups, that's the problem.
Well, the problem is that, for example, if you scale for height, okay, you're going to wind up with more people of African ancestry than Asian ancestry. And isn't it interesting that there are a whole lot of blacks in the NBA and very few Asians? So now, is that racist? Well, no, it's just the sport of basketball. One of the things it selects for among good players is being tall.
You know, very interesting, a Serbian got the NBA MVP of the NBA this year. Serbian.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, see, he's from Europe. He doesn't realize he's white. If you're from Europe, everybody's white, right? So, you know, hey, I didn't know I was white. I didn't know I couldn't jump.
Yeah, well, no, well, not only that.
He's very tall.
Yes, that's true.
He's certainly well, giant.
Well, yes, but people from Northern Europe tend to be taller as well than people from Southern Europe. And a lot of that has to do with genetics. But the point is that the other thing that Murray had a piece of data that has that I downloaded was crime rates by zip code. That does not look good for the blue states.
Yeah. It's very interesting that, but see, this goes to something that Steve Saylor was it Vox Day or Steve Saylor? One of them coined the phrase magic dirt, right? To describe the idea that the mistaken idea that the problem with, you know, where low income or whatever, you know, high crime, whatever social problem you're talking about, the problem is geography. You see, is that if we just take these Mexicans from Mexico and plant them here in America, they become Americans just like everybody else, except for the fact, of course, that doesn't happen. They bring with them their culture.
And the same thing happened, for example, with Appalachian whites who moved to Detroit during the Second World War to get jobs in a defense plant, and they took their cultural problems with them.
Yeah, and by the way, this is something else that has to be clarified. If you are looking at white Americans, right? Okay, if you're looking at white Americans, people like me and John, right, who are from the Deep South, right?
Well, I'm from the Mid-South.
But white Southerners, on average, if you're talking about average group differences, have lower IQ scores than Yankees. Average group differences. But we are both fairly high on the scale. My friend John here designed space rocket robots for NASA, you know, and I'm a journalist. It's not quite the same, but it requires a high degree of verbal skill, is my point.
You probably did better on your verbal SATs than your math.
Yeah, I had a certain math deficiency.
Whereas I did better on my math SATs than my verbal.
Yeah, and
but I was in the 99th percentile on my verbals. So,
yeah,
but
okay, just rub it in. Hey, Vanderbilt. I went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I went to Vanderbilt because it's the least expensive school I was admitted to.
Yeah. Okay, we're not going to say.
Well, no, the University of Tennessee, with the tuition was less, but I would have had to live in the dorm and the cost of living away from home.
Native of Nashville, he was a commuter student at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, but you know, and then the other places I was either out of state or it was an expensive school, so it's like.
Anyway, well, yeah.
I'm a cheap. Then, it's my Scottish heritage. You see, it's ethnic. It's
the cheapskate.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, but
what would a guy with a Mac in his name know about that?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, but the point being is that, as I say, you're Latino, right? Okay, you're Latino, you're Hispanic, as they call it. Okay, well, great. My son-in-law, one of my son-in-laws, he's my only son-in-law now because our youngest daughter hasn't married yet, but my son-in-law is Hispanic, okay? His parents are immigrants from Argentina, okay? Okay, and that means that my grandsons, okay, their two children, will be able to check the box, and they have Latino surnames, right? They also have Latino Luca and Franco, okay, are their first names. And, they're Latino, and never mind that half their family is rednecks, okay? But you see, on the other hand, I've got a brother-in-law whose mother was Mexican, straight out of Mexico, okay? His mother is Mexican, but his father was named Powers, okay? And so he doesn't get to check the box as Latino, or if your last name is Powers and you check the box, they look at you, what are you doing? Affirmative action for people of color, three of my grandchildren will be able to get it.
I have a cousin, a distant cousin, but a cousin, who is drop-dead gorgeous, red-haired, green-eyed, and born in Nairobi, so she checks African-American.
Joel Pollock of Breitbart.com, born in South Africa, he's African.
Yeah.
It's like you check the box, you know.
Well, Elon Musk. He's born in South Africa.
Right. And so this idea that, but the point I'm making is that Argentina and Mexico are two different countries with vastly different cultures, okay? Puerto Rico is not the same as Cuba, Somalia and Nigeria are vastly different countries.
Well, for that matter, then there are people who are from Brazil or Portugal and say, does it count for us too?
Right. Well, so, what about thinking about it is that the category of white, okay, just condenses so many different people with vastly different experiences.
Maybe that's the reason why they think we're supreme. We have all this stuff background going for us.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that speaking of the Supremes.
Yes.
I've always loved the Supremes, man. I mean, Baby Love, my Baby Love, Diana Ross and the Supremes. White guys who like the Supremes.
What about John Roberts and the Supremes?
Yeah, there you go. Well, about half of them are okay.
But then...
There's at least a 5-4 majority of the Supremes that are good.
Yeah. Could be. Anyway, what about Chinese defectors? What do you think about them?
I try not to think about them.
Oh, but they've been in the... One in particular has been in the news this week.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that the head of counterintelligence for Red China defected to our Defense Intelligence Agency.
So it is being reported.
And he brought in so much information about moles and other compromised stuff that the DIA kept him under wraps for quite a while before they began confronting other agencies with what they were finding out.
I bet you. Am I correct in my suspicion that the FBI and the CIA and the State Department are all crawling with Chinese agents?
Well, let me put it to you like this. When you remember there was that meeting in, I think it was Anchorage, but it was in Alaska between their foreign minister and our foreign minister, one of the things the Chinese demanded was that we give them this guy back. And literally the State Department didn't know we had him.
By the way,
in all truth, they were firmly believed what they said. We don't have him, right?
But the interesting thing about this is that if you go back to the origins of the Cold War, right, in the early years of the Cold War, it was the State Department, right, and the infiltration when Joe McCarthy held up that list. I have here in my hand a list of Soviet, or communist in the State Department. The State Department was just
there were more of them in the Treasury, apparently. So,
Alger Hiss, but
Harry Dexter White and
They were in the Department of Agriculture. They were all over. But here's a list of some of the stuff that this guy apparently brought with him. Evidence about COVID research and who was doing what, and the lab leak. Names of U.S. citizens who provide intel to China. Names of Chinese operatives in the United States. Financial records of U.S. businessmen and public officials who've received money from the Chinese government. A copy of Hunter Biden's hard drive.
Oh my God. It is being reported that among the information the defector has provided were Chinese government copies of the contents of the hard drive on Hunter Biden's laptop, showing the information the Chinese government has about Hunter's pornography problem and about his and the big guy's business dealings with Chinese entities.
Yeah, I've been an Army officer and I've been a consultant for agencies like the Department of Energy. My current work has nothing to do with anything that is classified, but I have had security clearances in the past. And most people who have top-level security clearances are not granted access to except what particular information they need in order to do their job. The principle is called need to know. And so you've got the DIA compartmentalizing very, very strictly what they're sharing and who they share it with and when they share it.
Counterintelligence is just a shadow game, man.
That's what my father did during the Second World War.
I'm thinking about John Foster Dulles, who was the guy that ran the CIA?
Alan. His brother Alan.
Alan Dulles, and who was after him, though? Who was the guy that was the... God, I can't call his name. But anyways, there was a lot of concern about who was the moles inside because they knew that they had problems and the FBI was leaking.
Yeah, but see, there's always been a presumption.
Right.
That the president of the United States should always have access to all classified information because he needs to know what's going on in the government. That's part of his job. As a matter of fact, he's the person who grants everyone else their access. But maybe we're about to see an exception on presidential need to know.
You know what's weird about this, John?
What?
Right. Is that for 3 years, right? They chased after this Russian collusion thing with Trump based on the idea that the Russians had compromat, right? Compromising material, compromat, right? Mm-hmm. That, this was what the PP tape was supposed to be all about, right? That was purely fictional. But the idea that Vladimir Putin could blackmail Trump, had compromising material on him that could be used to blackmail him. But what do the Chinese have on Joe Biden? We don't know.
Well, apparently they have Hunter's laptop. It's interesting that they had a copy of it too.
Yeah, so that kind of cuts into that plausible deniability.
Well, but no, you think about it. It probably wasn't turned on all that much at the repair shop. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Rudy Giuliani would not have given them a copy. So that means they were accessing his laptop remotely until he turned it in for repair.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah. So apparently there's some weird stuff going on here. Anyway, the Babylon Bee, though, reported this week that Biden announced that the Putin meeting was a success and that Hunter now has a job working for a Russian pipeline.
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyways, yes. But
that's not the silliest thing that's going on.
The silliest thing?
No, the silliest thing that's going on is the craziness that has been going on in the Rebecca Jones stuff this week.
Yes.
You picked up on the report that Charles Cook had.
Right. In case you didn't see this story already, the fake whistleblower. By the way, let me tell you who Rebecca Jones is, because you know people may just be tuning in.
By the way, this is going to qualifying as our crazy people are dangerous slot.
Yes.
It's going to be somewhat longish tonight.
All right. Well, Rebecca Jones was employed doing computer mapping for the Florida Health Department. Her job was to take the data and turn it into maps. Okay. Well, she is a psycho. Okay. I didn't say she was a psycho, but people are calling her a psychopath. But anyways, Rebecca Jones claimed that she was told to change the data,
which she didn't even have access to.
Right. That.
I mean, well, she had read only access to put it on her map,
claiming that there was some kind of cover up about Florida's COVID-19 pandemic, and so she was hailed. She got fired by the health department because of what she was doing. She was.
That didn't happen until after she was fired, but she was fired for insubordination.
Right. Okay, so she gets fired from this job, and then she's celebrated as a whistleblower because, you know, Governor DeSantis down there is going to get everybody killed, blah, 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 blah. So she's hyped up in the media until a few weeks ago when the House of Cards came tumbling down, and we had a little bit to do with that.
Well, actually, yes, because what she did was she made the mistake of trying to shut up a journalist by using a Maryland peace order.
And a Christina Pushaw.
Who, by the way, Christina is now the
press secretary
for Governor DeSantis. She had been for the last couple of years overseas working.
But she wrote an article in Human Events in February.
And that was exceedingly well documented with primary sources and links to the primary sources, basically exposing the lies that Jones was throwing out.
And so Jones tried to shut Christina Pushaw up, and that made us declare everybody blog about Rebecca Jones Day in April. And a few weeks after that, as a result of our calling attention to this case, Charles C.W. Cook at National Review did a very lengthy article that got wide circulation.
Basically, taking what Christina had developed and some of the stuff that I had found and stitching it together in a way in a venue that really had some punch.
Yeah, it had some punch. And now everyone who celebrated her as a whistleblower is trying to pretend that they never knew her. And meanwhile, though, now a news story this week. Rebecca Jones attempted to destroy the career of a PhD student at Florida State University who only wanted to help get Florida's COVID-19 death totals accurately counted. And I linked to this story, which is also at National Review. The word psychopath is now being widely used to describe the woman who was the subject of everybody blog about Rebecca Jones Day a couple of months ago. Because I'm a professional journalist, however, I would hesitate to use the clinical term psychopath because I have no credentials to make such a diagnosis and it might be construed as defamatory. Nevertheless, I have previously stated my opinion that Jones is deranged, demented, daft, wacky, bonkers, non copus mentis, off a rocker, nuttier than a Snickers bar, a few fries short of a Happy Meal, and cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Anyways, well, my good friend John Hoag, meanwhile, has the latest developments in the criminal case of Florida v. Jones.
Well, yeah, but that's not the only case that's going forward. There's also a case going forward for her having to do with a violating what amounts to a permanent restraining order. She had an affair when she was a graduate teaching assistant. She had an affair with an undergraduate. And then when that went sour and she wound up pregnant, but not necessarily, she sued the other guy for paternity and lost. and basically a part of her background is making false accusations. You're accused, the accuser MO that we're familiar with from people like Brett Kimberlin. This is some
classic.
It's just right out of that playbook. And so what you're talking about with the other graduate student is, you know, it's just, you know,
par for the course.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the same story again. But she filed a motion to dismiss in the criminal case against her for the computer crime case, which basically has to do with her accessing a supposed access to a computer system. And she filed a motion to dismiss. The state has filed their answer, basically pointing out the evidence that what she's saying is not likely to be true. So I would suspect that the next thing we'll see is the discovery is already going on in the case. So I suspect the next thing will be a trial date being set sometime soon. And so, you know, right now,
when will the judge rule on these motions?
Well, I have no idea. This stuff got filed this week.
Yeah.
And I'm not familiar with how things go that well in Florida and in Leon County in particular, which by the way is Tallahassee.
Right. Right.
But it's going to be an interesting, summer for this, young lady. She is going to she's pulled down her Twitter account that had to do with running for Congress in the 6th District of Maryland. Uh-huh. And she's on again, off again about running in the 1st District in Florida against
Matt Gaetz.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But she may soon be a resident of Florida again.
Stark.
extradition, we'll do that to you. So that's sort of what the way the things are going.
Well, anyways, but meanwhile, folks, Rebecca Jones is still at large. So be careful out there because, you know, crazy people are dangerous. And I hear the boogie-woogie piano in the background, which signals that we're approaching the end of the podcast. We're sorry that Diana was unable to join us due to technical problems, but we will be back here next week, 7 o'clock, Saturday night, same time.
And we'll see you then. Good night, Stacy. Keep going down the road.
Thank you.